Cape Talk, Pippa's Planet.
Now picture this, you're in the Kruger Park, you're creeping along, scouting for game, and the car in front of you suddenly slams on the brakes and excitedly winds down the windows and starts gesticulating and grabbing the binoculars. And as you scan the felt, wondering where the lion or cheetah is that they're looking at, you realize that the binoculars are not pointing into the bush in the distance. They're looking up, and that the wild excitement is actually around a tiny little bird perched in the nearby tree. If you're a birder yourself, then you're probably smiling and acknowledging that you have been that car in front. And if you're not, you may have had the experience of being in the car behind and either wondering what they were getting so excited about, or perhaps wondering, how can I get that excited about a tiny little bird? And I'm hoping that by the end of today's segment, perhaps you will be feeling a bit more excited about it all. My guest in studio is Rob Little, who is a leading conservationist and bird specialist with a long-standing passion for our feathered friends and a very long career in protecting them. He's played a significant role in the establishment and expansion of several of our national parks. So appropriately, his new book published by Jacana is called All About Birding in South Africa's National Parks. Rob, it's great to have you with us. Welcome.
Thank you, Pippa.
And again, if you'd like to ask a question, give us a call or leave a voice note, and the most interesting caller of the segment will win a copy of Rob's book for themselves. I'm not as birder myself, but I have family members who take it very, very seriously. So seriously, Rob, that they've been known to plan overseas trips around where to find a particular bird. But they're really spoiled for choice right here in South Africa, aren't they? How many different species do we actually have in total in this country?
Absolutely. I mean, in South Africa alone, we have 850. Southern Africa, you know, more towards 950. So it's a big chunk of Africa and the world's bird species that are found here in our country.
So you don't actually have to travel very far at all to go on a birding holiday?
No, you don't.
Okay. Where did your own fascination with birding begin?
Well, that's always a tough question. What day it began, nobody will ever know. But as a primary school child, I was a naturalist at school. I'd rather look at a bird book than a history book on any occasion. And even in those days, which is way back in the last century, towards the middle of the last century, it was a time when children like myself had a snake pit and an aviary. So, you know, we just reveled in the wildlife and being as close and understanding and watching and fascinated by the small creatures. Birds took over from the snakes. Obviously, I still like snakes, but they're just everywhere. They're so brilliant, and you can learn a lot from them, never mind learning how to identify them.
Okay. How many have you personally spotted in total?
I've seen 858 species in Southern Africa.
Sure.
Which is, yeah, okay. It's getting there.
Getting there, he says. That's a big number, particularly given that there are only 950 in total in Southern Africa. Are you somebody who has a bucket list of birds? Or are you still chasing down those 90 or so left?
That's the unfortunate thing. The closer you get to seeing them all, the more serious it becomes that those elusive ones are tracked down. Yes, absolutely. So when you said people go overseas to see birds and plan holidays to see birds, that's not unusual for us type of people.
Not at all. I'm sure my colleague who comes on after me will agree with you as well. I think he's done it himself. What would you rate as your own personal most exciting sighting ever?
Wow, that's perhaps even more difficult. And perhaps it evolves. In fact, that whole concept evolves. Mm. You would start with something, you know, people going out there, and when you're at your 250, 300 species, you'd be excited to see a gorgeous bushrack. What an amazing animal. And then you progress, and then you see an Arenia trogon, and then you look through the books, and there's something else called an East Coast achalot, and it just goes on and on and on. And I'm still after the African pitta, which is in Mozambique and Zimbabwe. So it's a very difficult one to say, well, which is your most exciting ever? Of course, I did most of my research work on grey-winged Franklins, so whenever I see one of those, they're my favourites.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, I mean, I think you wrote an entire degree on that, didn't you? An entire dissertation, yeah. Now, the book is particularly about national parks, and as I mentioned in the introduction, you've played a key role in establishing and expanding some of our parks, so I'm sure it's equally difficult to ask you whether you have a favourite national park for birding. But could you perhaps mention a couple of the parks that are really standout experiences for somebody who wants to go and see a lot of birds?
Well, yes. I mean, we're so fortunate in this country to have the 19 national parks, which are representative of the biomes, in other words, the vegetation types and landscapes that vary across our country. So although it's difficult to ever choose one, they are so different. The northern areas, Kruger National Park, Makapungubwe, and so on, they have the most bird species, so you'll see more different kinds of birds there. But down in the south, in the Western Cape and the Karoo, we get more species that are only located there and nowhere else in the world. They're endemic. So there are two different fascination points there. But I guess, if you ask me my favorite, the Kalahari system is just so very special because of its openness and its you get amongst the behavior of the animals there. You can watch a Kabar goshawk chasing or a Lanner falcon ambushing birds at a waterhole, and it's all about activity. It's so open, you can actually experience it all. So, and then the Drakensberg, I mean, Golden Gate National Park, up in those highlands, those massive cliffs and bearded vultures flying around.
Extraordinary. So, yeah. I won't ask you. It's like asking you to choose between your favorite children, I guess. You have chosen, though, this is your fifth book, and you've chosen to make it specifically about the national park. So what was the inspiration behind doing that?
Well, yes, it's a bit of a tangent from the norm. I started doing the first two were very dinky little books about birds in the Drakensberg parks, in fact, and then on to the Swartberg-Langeberg area. And then it went to game birds, and I did game birds of Southern Africa and then game birds of Africa, which is kind of, I suppose, my business. But my good friend and bird photographer, Mance Boyson, and I were sitting around a fire, and we just kind of wondered, why is there no book on the birds of South African national parks or birding in South African national parks? Because there isn't, obviously. So, and the parks really are our jewel in the crown of our conservation areas. And the Big Five, as magnificent as they are, have done a great job in the last 50 years, whatever, in attracting people to our parks, to the country, to Africa. But the birds are overlooked, and our parks offer such a wonderful experience in birding.
Okay, so the book is The Birding in South Africa's National Parks, and let's talk a little bit about the structure of the book and how you've broken it up. You've broken it up into the four biogeographic regions of the Northern, the Arid, the Frontier, and the Cape regions. And then within each of those, there are descriptions of the parks and some of the more interesting birds you can find there, and a top 10 for each park, as well as descriptions of their habitats. How comprehensive is this? Is this all of the birds that you'll find in those parks? And if not, how did you choose what to leave in and what to leave out?
Well, there are two aspects to that last part of your question. No, it's not all the birds in the parks. Firstly, because of the 700 or so species that are found in the 19 national parks, there's 640 represented in the book. And at the back, there's also a listing of which birds occur in which of the parks.
Yeah.
That is because those remaining 60-odd are really fairly vagrant and not commonly seen. So it would be add to the confusion to have all of those in. And then also I decided that we wouldn't include the pelagics, the seabirds, those that are really out there that live in the sea and don't come to shore on our mainland, as cormorants and gannets and so on do, because that's also just another world.
It really is. It's a whole different story. You mentioned Mance Boyson. He's done the photographs very beautifully. I mean, that is a key part of enjoying this book, is the beautiful photography. How long did it take the two of you to create this book?
Well, Mance has been photographing birds for quite a number of years. I don't think he ever called himself a bird photographer, though, because he would do it just to get the record and to be able to look later to confirm that that was, in fact, what he was looking at when he was in the field. So even when I suggested to him that I'd like to do a book with one photographer and I'd really prefer it would be him, he kind of went, oh. But looking through his work, I mean, it's amazing. It's part of the modern cameras these days, but really fantastic photographs. We decided to do the book in late 2016, I guess it was somewhere around there. It takes about a year to 18 months to put a book together and take it through the publishing system.
Okay, and it is now available in stores, published by Jacana in all good bookstores. Let's get to a couple of questions which are starting to come through on our SMS and WhatsApp line about the basics of birding. Just a reminder to the audience, you're very welcome to phone in. In fact, you're encouraged to phone in with a question, because the best caller of the segment is going to win a copy of this beautiful book. 021-446-0567 is the number to dial. Somebody asking, several people, in fact, asking about the importance of binoculars. Let's talk about the basic equipment for somebody who's just starting out as a birder. The two things I think of immediately are a good set of binoculars and a good field guide to work off. What are the basics?
Well, that's right, those two in that order, probably, absolutely. However, binoculars is a complex issue, complex topic, And many people will walk around with 25 to 30,000 rand binoculars, which are great when you get there, and if and when you can afford that. But, you know, there is a big range of binoculars in the less than 20,000 rand range that are absolutely capable of you being able to identify a bird at distance and in certain light conditions. I think the most important thing is that I don't know all about the optics, but 8x42 means that it lets in a lot of light and it's got good magnification. And that's the size binocular range you want to be looking at.
Okay. Any particular brands that you swear by that you've always used, or is there a good variety available?
Are we allowed to?
You can name them, yeah.
I mean, they're the obvious Leicas are what I use, and those are unfortunately up there towards the 30,000 rand. But yes, well, you get to a stage when you want to have the best. But down in the bottom, the Nikons, the Lynx are very good. Oh, there are quite a couple.
Okay.
In fact, in the BirdLife South African magazine, African BirdLife, which is available either if you become a member of African BirdLife or in the bookshops, they often have articles on binoculars, quite often done by Peter Ryan, who's with me at the Fitzpatrick Institute.
Yes.
And those are very worth reading if you really want to consider the shopping options.
Okay, we've had Peter as a guest fairly recently, yes, in fact. Yes. So, okay. Thanks for that advice. So African BirdLife magazine, a good place to start if you're looking for some information. Then what about the field guide? I mean, growing up, I know the Roberts Book of Birds was your go-to reference book, but it's gone on. There are not any great varieties of guides available. There are lots of good apps available to assist in identification these days.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are three field guides. Probably the top, when I say the top, the most commonly used one is the Sasol Birds of Southern Africa. The Newman's Guide is still around. And then, of course, the main Roberts 7, which is the handbook, which weighs like 5 kilograms, that sits at home.
Yeah.
But a field guide has been done from that, the Roberts field guide. So it's really just those three, with Sasol probably being the leading one used.
Okay. We're going to go to the lines and take a couple of questions now. We have Steve on the line from Cape Town. Steve, good afternoon.
How is it, Pippa? Yeah, I'm curious about bird recordings, identifying them by their sounds. You know, I was in Seabrook not so long ago, and what drew me outside in the morning was the sound. It sounded like a very large snake, you know, like a ch-ch-ch-ch. And I walked outside, but as I got outside, this thing flew off about the size of a pigeon, but more the shape of like a shrike. And I thought maybe it's a woodpecker. I've pored through the Roberts Bird books and so on. I can't identify this thing, man. Maybe there's a clue there.
That's quite a tough one. Any idea what that might have been? And let's have a broader conversation about the role of sound in identification.
Sure. Well, you know, the bird calls are absolutely diagnostic in many cases, and most cases. You do get some mimics amongst the shrikes and robins and so on. And that gets a bit confusing, and that's what's also stopped there being a reverse app, which allows us to record a sound and then it'll identify it for you, like the music app.
Shazam do. For birds,
exactly. Yeah. Okay. Because of those mimics and the variations across the landscape.
That's interesting.
But you get the obvious ones. I mean, how important is it to be able to identify a bird by its call? Well, I mean, there's some that you most often only do identify it by a call. The red-chested cuckoo, for instance, which is the pitmay frow. You probably heard it lots. And you'll never see them. So they hide away in the top foliage of the trees. But you know it's there. So you know that bird's there. You wake up in the morning and you hear a hoddy-daw above your roof. Well, you don't have to go outside to have a look what that is.
You know precisely what it is. Yes.
But no, bird calls can be very frustrating. A bird that sounds like a snake, I think you said in the West Coast National Park, well, could be a boo-boo shrike. Yeah, that would probably
be
your
best
guess. Yeah,
okay. Yeah. Interesting question, Steve. Thank you so much for calling through. We're happy to take a couple more on 021-446-0567. We have Zion on the line, only 10 years old, I believe. Zion, lovely to have you with us on Cape Talk. What's your question?
Hi, my question is, we know swallows come from Europe, but do we know where in Europe?
Where are the swallows coming from, which we find in South Africa? Rob, are there different kinds coming from different places?
Yes, they certainly are. The one that he's talking about, I think, is, it would be the barn swallow, which is the old, used to be called the European swallow, and it's from the whole of Europe, well, Eastern, Western Europe and the UK. But then the rest that we have down here, most of them are either local migrants or some of them even resident. So they move up into Central and East Africa just to avoid the winter down here and then come back to breed. So there's a variety. We've got, you know, over a dozen species of swallows in the country.
Fantastic. Zain, thank you so much for calling through with your call. We also have Werner on the line from Cape Town with a question about night birds. Afternoon, Werner.
Hi, hello, Pippa. Werner here. Yeah, please ask Rob, what is the best time at night to view night birds, and what equipment do you need for owls and night birds? You know, where I live, there's so many night birds, but very hard to spot them or see them. So perhaps you can give us some advice on that one.
Van, I hope my dad is listening, because we have a long-standing family joke about the Scops owl that he was adamant was there and nobody else could see. What is the trick to viewing night birds?
Well, as a best time, there isn't really a best time. Nocturnal birds are mostly active most of the night. However, a lot of them do come out of the precuscular period, which is that sort of dusk time of the evening. And any time from then on, they do a lot of their hunting. The trick with night birds, I guess, would be to use a good light, so a spotlight or a very strong torch. But something that we must remember is that they have very sensitive eyes for light. That's why they can see best at night, or a lot better than we can. So if you're going to use a spotlight or some strong torch, don't shine it directly at them. Shine it past to the side of them so that just the peripheral light catches them. And secondly, don't leave that light on too long.
Great advice. Werner, thanks so much for your call. That's best time at night. What about during the day? If you were out looking for big game, everybody knows you go in the early morning or in the evening. Is there a best time of day to be spotting daytime birds?
Well, generally, yes, and it's very similar to the game viewing. But it can also vary with species-specific situations. I mean, sand grouse, for instance, in the Kalahari, they'll come to the water holes where you're going to see them most easily, because they're very difficult to spot on the ground when they're feeding. And they'll come to water holes between 9 and 10 in the morning, and that's explicitly between 9 and 10 in the morning. You know, almost if you're there at 10:15, they've been and gone. But generally, early morning birding, that dawn chorus period when all the birds wake up and they're declaring their territories and they're doing their displays, that is the best period. In fact, in the Karoo, for instance, as the day warms up towards 10 o'clock and so on, it just goes extremely quiet. And you think there are no birds there whatsoever, but 2 hours earlier, there little things
alive,
flying
all
over. Yeah.
Very interesting. Thank you, Werner, for an interesting question as well. We have Len on the line from Plumstead wanting to talk about photographing birds. Len, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. My problem is I have started taking up bird photography, but my problem is I'm not very good at the colors. In other words, I'm slightly colorblind in blue, greens, reds, and things like that. How would I overcome it, or is it one of those things that will dog me forever?
That's a really tough one. Any advice, Rob?
Well, that's a different discipline altogether, I would say. And sorry for that, because that must be frustrating with the descriptions in the books in black and white wording. And then you look at either the photograph or the illustration, and it's apparently a different color. No, you're going to really just need to focus on the features of the bird and the shapes of those patternings, I suppose, then.
I guess so. Okay. Len, sorry, if there is an optometrist listening who has a better insight than that and can recommend a way for you, we'll put you in touch, Len, but thanks for your call. Right, a lot of people asking about feeding birds and whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. Louise in Parklands, I think your question is along those lines. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I love my birds. I have a bird feeder, and I feed them with wild bird seeds. And a little while ago, I hung up the bottles with the nectar made from sugar. And then I added the colouring, and then someone said, no, don't add colouring because the babies are born blind. And then I stopped the colouring, and then the bees came, and they were drowning in the bottles. But now I want to know if it's good to hang that imitation nectar for the birds.
Yes, well, in general, again, feeding birds, as the question, whether it's the nectar or just grains or fruits or mealworms, the point is that urban birds are fairly opportunistic, and they have become habituated to scavenging or utilizing, optimizing from what we offer them as human beings. So it's not a bad thing. People say, well, don't they become dependent on that? And if you stop, they'll die. No, they won't. They've got their other sources, and they have their natural backup systems that they're feeding on as well. The actual nectar story, the sugar water, is more complicated, and we have recommendations in what should be in that solution. I'm not going to go into all of that now, but you can get that from us if you'd like to.
Thank you, Louise, for your call. Rob, it's been like talking to a walking birding encyclopedia. Thank you so much for joining us today and for this beautiful book, Birding in South Africa's National Parks by Rob Little, with gorgeous photography by Mance Boyson. It's published by Jacana and available in all good stores now at around about 195 Rand. Rob, I hope it won't be the last time we have you in studio chatting to us about what is clearly an absolute passion for you. Thanks for sharing it with us today.
Thank you, Pippa, and I hope people will appreciate the birds as well as the big game now in our parks.
Absolutely. And thanks. You know what the best part is? If you're not seeing any big game, it doesn't mean you've had a wasted day, because you can see an absolute wealth of bird excitement around you.